Yeah, we were really a little bit messed up, I would say.
I couldn't believe, like, oh, wow, this is, I mean, how this is possible.
It is not everything said when you say we give them back.
Kann man Gefühle für ein Objekt haben? Ja, selbstverständlich. Das kennen wir alle. Jede und jeder von uns hat eine Lieblingstasse, ein kuscheliges Kopfkissen oder ein Erbstück der Oma. Können Objekte ein Teil von uns sein? Manchmal hat man das Gefühl, ohne das eigene Handy unvollständig zu sein. Genau so geht es den Maasai in Bezug auf zum Beispiel Ohrringe, Kopfschmuck oder Kleidungsstücke. Für uns sind das einfach nur Dinge, die wir in unseren europäischen Museen ausstellen. Für sie ist das viel mehr. Wie nähert man sich solchen Gefühlsbindungen als Sozialanthropologe oder Sozialanthropologin? Und wie wirkt sich der Kolonialismus bis heute auf unser Gefühlsleben und vor allem das der Herkunftsgemeinschaften aus? Was bedeutet diese Forschung für die eigenen Gefühle? In dieser Folge werdet ihr etwas über den Forschungsalltag einer Sozialanthropologin und eines Soziologen erfahren, über ihre Rolle im Feld und warum es wichtig ist, sich über diese Fragen Gedanken zu machen.
Sie hören More Than a Feeling. Gefühle und Gesellschaft.
Ein Podcast des Sonderforschungsbereichs Affective Societies, Dynamiken des Zusammenlebens in bewegten Welten.
Hallo aus Berlin, ich bin Maike Haken und mit mir in unserem Aufnahmestudio ist meine Kollegin Alissa Geffert. Wir gehen heute mit der ersten Folge unserer dritten Staffel des Podcasts More Than a Feeling, Gefühle und Gesellschaft an den Start und ich bin ehrlich gesagt etwas aufgeregt. Bevor wir euch verraten, was es mit dieser Audiosequenz am Anfang auf sich hat und was das Besondere dieser Staffel ist, stellen wir uns vielleicht kurz vor. Alissa, magst du anfangen?
Ich bin Alissa Geffert und ich bin studentische Mitarbeiterin hier im Sonderforschungsbereich Affective Societies an der FU Berlin. Und ich studiere Psychologie und freue mich, mit dir den Podcast jetzt unterstützen zu können.
Ja. Ich bin Maike und bin Soziologin, derzeit im Sonderforschungsbereich Affective Societies. Und vorher war ich ziemlich lange in der Religionssoziologie und habe dort Feldforschung betrieben.
Und genau da setzt unsere dritte Staffel jetzt an. Wir haben uns gedacht, dass nun in der dritten Laufzeit des Sonderforschungsbereichs wieder so viele spannende sozial-, kultur- und geisteswissenschaftliche Projekte an den Start gehen, mit denen wir gern mal genauer sprechen und über die Schulter schauen wollen bei dem, was sie tun. Wenn man sich zum Beispiel naturwissenschaftliche Forschung anschaut, dann geht man ins Labor oder ist bei Experimenten dabei. Aber was denn nun ein Ethnologe, eine Soziologin oder ein Kommunikationswissenschaftler den ganzen Tag so macht und was diese Menschen beforschen, das weiß man meist gar nicht so genau. Es fängt ja schon bei dem Begriff der Feldforschung an sich an. Da versteht ja auch jeder nicht genau, was damit gemeint ist.
Ja, stimmt. Und dann kommt noch die Frage dazu, wann man denn von Feldforschung und wann von Datenerhebung spricht.
Unser Podcast richtet sich also an alle, die Wissenschaft an sich interessant finden, selbst darin tätig sind, aber vor allem auch diejenigen, die einfach Lust haben, interessante Menschen und ihre Arbeit kennenzulernen und dabei in ein kleines Abenteuer einzutauchen.
Ja, und abenteuerlich kann es bei der Feldforschung auf alle Fälle werden. In jeder Folge haben wir einen Gast, der ganz frisch von seinen Erfahrungen berichtet. Und in unserer ersten Folge haben wir gleich zwei Gäste, die in unterschiedlichen Teilprojekten des Sonderforschungsbereichs tätig sind, aber gemeinsam einen kleinen Abstecher zum Pitt Rivers Museum in Oxford gemacht haben. Maren Wirth ist Sozial- und Kulturanthropologin, Teilprojekt Affective Engagements, das die Bedeutung von Affekten und Emotionen für die Dekolonialisierungsdebatte über Kulturgüter zwischen Tansania und Deutschland untersucht. Eine große Rolle spielen dabei eben auch Affekte und Emotionen der Forscher selbst. Das wird für unseren Podcast auf jeden Fall besonders interessant sein. Das Teilprojekt kooperiert sehr eng mit dem Teilprojekt Umstrittenes Eigentum. Und da kommt Libor Kalanga Moko von Hause aus Soziologe und unser zweiter Gast ins Spiel. Das Teilprojekt schaut auf Kollaborationsprojekte zwischen Museen und indigenen VertreterInnen der Herkunftsländer der Museumsobjekte, um deren in Anführungsstrichen Rückerstattung es geht. Ja, und in den Shownotes findet ihr einige interessante, wichtige Informationen und Links und unter anderem eine Übersetzung des Interviews, denn die heutige Folge ist auf Englisch. Erstmal herzlich willkommen Maren und Libor. Welcome and thanks for being here today.
Maren, can you first tell us something about your discipline? What does a social and cultural anthropologist do?
Thank you. That is a really complicated question. I think social and cultural anthropology is one of the more complicated disciplines that no one ever understands. It's also an issue for students of social and cultural anthropology to explain to their parents and families what they're actually doing. I would say it's an empirical social science, which can look at any topic. And the specific thing about it is that you really try to understand. It is more the perspective than like the field or the specific method. So you try to analyze societal issues like as a whole and try to look at all kinds of aspects that are relevant for that issue, and also to really understand what it is like for the people involved and not so much from outside. Yeah, maybe like that.
So for example, you travel to Tanzania and talk to activists there. Can you briefly say something about your role in the project?
I did field work in Tanzania together with LIBOR, and there I was also in Tanzania for 5 months and talked to especially people in the rural area in the village, and I did research on historical photographs that were taken during colonial times. So I was mostly doing interviews, 40 elicited interviews with them about those there, yeah.
And perhaps can you say something more about your first field work at Tanzania for your master thesis? What did you do there? You observations or...
I think that's what I just meant. I did interviews a lot, photo elicited interviews, but also participant observation. And I think that's the main thing in social and cultural anthropology. Also, it's a distinction from sociology, for example, that you do this kind of participant observation and you try to immerse yourself into a different kind of a context that can be, if you're researching activists, for example, you go to a demonstration, you participate in whatever, maybe a street blockade or something, if you want to research the Letzte Generation or something now. Mm-hmm. And so you can really physically also understand what things are like. And I mean, that's the method. And for me in Tanzania, I try to live in the village and so really understand people's perspectives and learn the language as well, which was really difficult. But also, I mean, it was not like a typical ethnographic field work. You go to some remote village, to some indigenous community, and then analyze their ways of being, because it was more a political issue also to really talk about restitution, debate about these photographs, colonialism. And also I was there together with LIBOR. So,
It was a lot of fun.
I also have a chicken, actually. I own a chicken in Tanzania.
Pointed on a very interesting part, and perhaps LIBOR as origin sociologist can say something to that, because I'm also a sociologist, and we also have this focused ethnography, and the most difference I think is that you don't have these long field stays and you don't have to step into more foreign cultures or communities. Mostly you observe communities or groups that are more familiar to your own culture. What do you would say about that, LIBOR?
Yes, that's an interesting thing about these two disciplines. And you're right, yeah, so my background is from sociology, but I wasn't working on emotions before, but other different topics. I think the approaches are different, and I think that's very interesting. that, you know, with a sociologist, you know, we have this this more very clearly defined sort of methods that we, mm-hmm. you know, but also the kind of society that we research or we do our researches with. So for here, I think it's, you focus more on, like if you are a sociologist in Europe, in Germany, for example, you would rather focus on, to, you know, the modern society, mm-hmm. in the modern German society. And yeah, and that's very different from anthropology. And that's what I think is a very, very big advantage of anthropology. In that sense, that, you know, you have a possibility to do this really long-term fieldwork, ethnography, mm-hmm. in a very traditional sense of ethnography, and then I think that really provides you with enough time to, you know, be there, you know, try also to grasp things from the perspective of your interlocutors, and I think that's very, very important, especially mm-hmm. when, in terms of the kind of research at least that I do, where, you know, you really need to spend so much time with people, also make them understand your questions, your topic, you know. And saying this because, you know, as I said before, that I work in the interface of colonialism, materiality, referring to ethnographic objects and affect, and I think it's not so much easy to really, I mean, it's not like so difficult, but you really need enough time to get into that, into seeing really things from the lens of your interlocutors. So, yeah, so I think, and also, as a decolonial approach from anthropology, I think ethnography could be something very interesting in that sense for grasping like more concepts, you know. You can even say theory making, practice, affect, you know, these reactions. I think that's super interesting. It's not like I'm despising sociology. I think sociology is also very, very important. But again, I think we have, I don't know, but the methods, the approaches is totally different. As ethnography, it's more, you don't have that much time to. Yeah.
Going native.
Like exactly.
You don't have to avoid going native.
I think it's also something that that would, there's the discourse maybe somewhere else with the going native that that's, but I wanted to add also that a lot of things happen by coincidence through ethnographic fieldwork, that you have like a situation where you talk to someone and you're at lunch and then something comes up, and it's not, you never move outside this mode of researching and generating knowledge, and you're really open to whatever comes up, and that also gives you the flexibility to really engage with people's perspectives. And
vielleicht seid ihr noch nicht mit allen Begriffen und Debatten, die gerade Thema waren, vertraut. In den Shownotes findet ihr weiterführende Informationen.
Yeah, and if I may add something, yeah, that the methods are really not so strict that, you know, like I have to do semi-structured interview and I really have to stick into that, you know. So you really have this openness to, you know, as Martin said, to really, you know, you are free to grasp things as they happen at any moment, and I think that's an interesting part of.
So, would you say that you really work with your own affects and emotions, or is it like it's not just an observation? It's also like, how would you describe how you also use your own emotions and affects in the situation?
Yeah. I think that's another advantage methodologically, because you really have time to do like this sort of self-reflection also, and you know, and think about the situation, the interviews, the conversations, formal and informal conversations that you have, and reflect about your own sort of state of the body, or you know, reactions and that. And I think that's a very, you know, big advantage, I think. Nowadays in anthropology, we also have, it's very common that people also do this reflection, let's say, end of your whatever, what you are doing, let's say, in your thesis or so. So, and, you know, it gives that room to do all that, yeah.
Can you say, so it sounds a little bit like autoethnography, but I read that the social and cultural anthropologists' view of autoethnographic work is a little bit different from what I know, because I know it as a more psychological method of exploring one's feelings and the reasons behind them, but as Alyssa said, you can also use diary writing or memos to reflect on what influence my feelings as a researcher have on findings and perception. And
I would say maybe something about this, because I think that there's a little bit a shift with this term or notion of autoethnography, because I think autoethnography, as it is developed, like relevant if I'm also focused on people that are not researching someone else's culture but their own. And I think that this kind of reflection, that's at least that people use also the notion of autoethnography nowadays also a lot for their own reflections. But I would say that that is not always necessarily the case, that this is actually autoethnography. Because this personal reflection of your positionality in the field and also your own emotions is has for a long time been a necessary part of research. And I mean, making it explicit is also something that is done here a lot at the CRC with the diaries, emotion diaries and all that. But I wouldn't say it's necessarily autoethnography.
Yeah, and you are right. I don't think I did autoethnography, because the approach is really different. I'm not trying to research about myself and my experiences with the, let's say, ethnographic museums in Europe also, but rather trying to address the topic, you know, and bring to the fore like perspectives from people from my community, which are not necessarily the same as mine, because we are different. I mean, I'm an educated, you know, elite. I received Western education, even in, you know, and so that makes so much difference. I think. Two, you know, my interlocutors in my village or in my community, but I kind of try really to be self-reflexive also, because I think research is not only about how people, our interlocutors feel about something that we are working on, but also that, you know, it also affects us personally. And I think, to give an example, is the first time when I visited the Ethnological Museum, Berlin Ethnological Museum, and I reflected on that, you know, because it was my first time to visit a museum that had collection from colonial context, especially a collection from my community, you know, and that really affected me. I couldn't believe, like, oh, wow, this is, I mean, how this is possible, but I mean, it's...
Just for the audience, some more information, because you are, your research object is, or are the Orders of Feeling of Tanzanian Maasai, and Laiba yourself a Maasai. So just for understanding what you even said a little bit better and your special position, I think so. And also it could be an advantage. At the same time, it could be much more harder to be part of that community. You already said that you're not in that community from the socio-structural level as a part of a more elite group. But I think it's really a challenge from an effective perspective, or isn't it?
Yeah, it is not easy. I think it's, I would use the term that Apologo use, the Hafi. You know, I'm like a Hafi, you know, I'm partly a Maasai, but partly non. I mean, being socialized in a different, in a different system of education, Western education, let's say. And I think that's also how it works when I'm doing my research with my community, right? So it's challenging that others from my community will think of me as a native, you know, and so might be somehow challenging to, or at least technical, to address some issues. Like let's say if my interest will, like, for example, to understand how they conceive, or different understandings of, let's say, ethnographic objects from the ethnological museum, and it's not like I don't know them, you know. I know the objects, I used them, you know. I continue to use them when I'm in the village. So it's a bit, I mean, this is an experience now that I have been have experienced a lot in my research, that they will ask like, oh no, you know this, you know, why are you asking me about this, you know, you have also used this, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, again, it depends. More senior, let's say Maasai elders, men and women, you know, would perceive that differently. They might think of me as an educated person who have been somehow, I don't know, estranged from culture by the education system that I went through for quite a long time, and they are more open, you know. So it is also, I don't know, ambivalent.
Yeah.
And what is important, at least for me as a researcher, is to be conscious of this double image that I have as a researcher, you know, researching about his own community, you know. Now, to come into affect and emotion, I think then that's also interesting because, you know, as I said, my topic is about colonialism and the collecting activities in the Maasai community, and I can't distance myself from that, you know, especially the fact that, you know, I'm totally part of the community that was affected or have been affected by colonialism. So I was shocked to see the pieces in the museum, just as people were when they saw, when I brought the information to them, when I showed them photographs of objects in the museum here. So in the end, we really do share a lot, and in terms of feelings, you know, anger and all that, you know. But again, you know, as a researcher, knowing exactly that, you know, I really want to understand that. I mean, it's all about positioning. Yeah, I can still, yeah, do all this and really try to understand things from their experiences.
I think these are good closing remarks. And dear Maren, dear Leiber, thank you very much for taking the time to tell us about your research, your visit to the Pitt Rivers Museum in Oxford, but also and especially about your emotional experiences of doing research in and of effective societies.
Und wenn ihr wissen wollt, wie es mit Maren und Leibor und ihrer Forschung weitergeht, dann folgt uns auf Social Media oder abonniert unseren Podcast.
Denn es wird auch einen zweiten Teil geben, in dem unsere Gäste mit etwas Zeitabstand berichten, wohin der Weg bei der Erforschung von Gefühlen und Emotionen in der Gesellschaft geführt hat. Und wer nicht bis zum zweiten Teil dieser Episode warten kann, der kann in unsere nächste Folge reinhören und Teil des Forschungsabenteuers sein.
Weiterführende Infos findet ihr in den Shownotes und auf unserer Website. Bis zum nächsten Mal.
Tschüss!